Hello and welcome to another episode of My Opinion Means Nothing. This week I'm joined by Aya.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you.
Usually on my show we go through the topics. The first one is usually what's happening in the world. I'll do it while I'm recording.
Okay.
I started doing this interesting thing where, like, I done it first with Aaron James, where I found an interesting fact that happened on this day.
Okay.
So other than the fact that it's a National Poetry Day.
Yes.
But I'm sure there's other interesting things in history that happened today.
I know, but poetry's awesome.
Yeah,
so.
It is. I think today was the first time ever I guess, shared poetry on National Poetry Day.
That's really cool.
Like, I started writing it on my bus journey.
Yeah, I saw an Instagram that said at work, and you put like a little alien emoji. I love that.
Because I do a lot of writing at work, I was just writing it on the way to work on the bus, got on the underground, I was just still typing away.
I love that.
And then I just got to work and there was a moment where I answered the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Someone was talking, explaining whatever they were talking about, whatever their problem with, whatever I needed to help them with. And I was just there typing away at my poem.
But, I mean, you were obviously inspired by what they were having to say, right?
It was just coming
out
of me.
Feeding the emotion.
I was just...
You know, I had that once. I was halfway through writing this spoken word piece, and my boyfriend at the time, he called me. And it was interesting because then the progression of the piece, you actually felt that it had been, someone had interjected to that, someone had called halfway through. And then my spoken word piece that I was actually struggling with managed to resolve itself.
Okay.
And based on the conversation I'd had with him. So it's really powerful stuff, you know, like writing and then simultaneously being affected by the things that are happening around you.
Yeah. I mean,
it's life, man. It's life.
That's where I get most of my inspirations from, to be honest.
Yeah.
Life and the things that happen around me.
Yeah. I think I'd probably write a lot of crazy stuff if I had time to write when I was working. Like all the crazy people I meet. I mean, you know, it's only a breakfast cafe, but like, crazy people eat breakfast, I guess. I'm one of them. Breakfast is great.
So, the first topic, or I guess article, that I found, that is not what I wanted to do. Hopefully it's loads. I forgot to charge my iPad, right? I only realised at the end of work when I was charging my phone, and I was just like, oh.
Oh dear.
Just turn off the Wi-Fi.
Oh, you know, first world problems, but you've got too many tech items.
Yeah.
You need to charge all of them.
Yeah, I do.
The worst thing that ever happened to me was I was living in Paris, and I left my one adapter plug. I'd managed to lose all of them apart from one. I left my one adapter plug in my mate's room and got back from a night out at like 1, realised that not only was my laptop dead, but my phone was also dead, so I couldn't even use my laptop to charge my phone.
Stress.
And I realised I didn't have a watch. Like, this is a moment where I realised I was so dependent on checking my time on my phone. I was living alone, I didn't have a charged laptop, I didn't have a charged phone. I literally had to just leave my curtains wide open, wake up. I look like a crazy person. I have -4 eyesight, so I couldn't even find my glasses in the morning. And I went out of my room, ran across the road to the Hotel Ibis, went in, burst in my pajamas, and was like, what time is it? And this French guy is like, c'est 8h30. And I was like, okay, cool. And then went back into my apartment, set a half an hour timer on my microwave, and jumped in the shower. I was like, oh my gosh, it's actually come to this. I live by myself and I don't know what time it is. Because I come from a family of 10, so like I always feel like I have someone to tell me the basic fundamental things, like the time. And
I can imagine. So next time you get a clock for your wall.
Yes,
your apartment.
And multiple adapter plugs.
Yeah, right. So this first one. A toddler was left outside a shopping hall while the mum went inside.
Cool. Rude.
No, I just
thought... That's really bad.
Yeah, right? So there was like these pictures right here. This toddler.
Oh my gosh, cruising in a little truck.
So the mum just went inside the shop quickly and left the toddler outside.
That's so bad.
I mean,
and the article's just commenting on the situation.
How it was reported.
I mean, you leave, you know, your pet on a lead outside a shop, but even then, like, you know, you've still got to nip out, be back in a couple of minutes. Like, that's so awful. It's interesting we brought this up because I was sat in a car with my mate Alex, and just that day at college we've been talking about, you know, technology and how it's affecting people's awareness. And it is bad when I'm at work in the morning and I'm at the cafe, I see mums ignoring their children on their mobiles, and I see them passing their mobiles to their children, and there's no interaction. Like, when I was younger, my dad used to sing me to sleep. I obviously don't know what happens apart from these situations that I've seen. But anyway, sorry, I've slightly digressed. When I was in the car, I saw a toddler sat on the floor with loads of Waitrose shopping bags, and the mum stood next to the toddler on the concrete floor on her phone. And I was like, okay, cool. So you're holding a phone, your shopping bags are on the floor with your children. And it was kind of like the child was dissociated from the situation. Like, the child was one of the shopping bags.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe, you know, I think, you know, I can't deny that technology is really useful. And it's great when, you know, I'm a creative. So when I'm trying to get in touch with people, like, it's really easy to connect with each other. And when you go to poetry nights, like, it's really cool to just instantly hook up with other creatives, share ideas. There's so many positive things. But I feel like in the future, I'm going to be really conscious of how I use my mobile around my children. Yeah. I think it's so important. And I mean, I guess this kind of ties into the awareness, the lack of awareness and leaving your child outside a shop.
And thinking it's okay, I mean.
I don't know.
It's kind of like, to me, it makes me think about nowadays, it feels like people have children as an accessory as opposed to having children to start a family.
It's so true.
So seeing this, it makes me think, like, so yeah, they would leave their child outside, because why would I take my child inside while I'm shopping, I guess?
It really doesn't make sense, does it? I think it's sad because I think people's ability to communicate is just decreasing more and more.
Yeah.
And people's, you know, awareness and connection with each other. Like, people just, I feel like with the introduction of technology, I don't know, obviously I don't know in this situation what the scenario is, what's happened for this to... I'm slightly gobsmacked, to be honest.
Wait, hang on. A picture of the child was left in a ride on car outside the charity shop in Hull at lunchtime yesterday with no adults in sight. A woman who was passing by posted this image on Hull's Crime Watch Facebook page and reported the incident. She said that she was told that the officers would patrol the area and check the CCTV. Most people have criticized the action of the mother. However, someone else claimed that it used to be the norm.
It used to be the norm to leave your kids outside. I mean,
I don't know.
It's a tricky one because I do recognize that we are in a time where we are a lot more PC and we are a lot more aware. I think in the same respect, we're also in a time where our connection with each other is decreasing.
Yeah.
So there's always things transitioning and we're always flowing in and out of things. I only have one opinion on this matter, and it's that you don't leave your toddler outside outside a shop.
Okay, selfie dips.
Oh my gosh.
This is a real thing.
I feel like there's a through line. There's a through line in what we're talking about. Lack of connection and selfie deaths. Don't use your phones, guys. You will die or lose connection with your children. It's true.
So apparently, 259 people are reported dead seeking the perfect pictures.
No.
For selfies.
Please don't tell me this guy is one of them.
Possibly. This is like... apparently there's been a quest for the most extreme selfie, which has killed 259 people.
Oh my gosh.
Between the years of 2011 and 2017. So within 7 years, about 300 people have died from trying to take an extreme selfie.
Do you know what? I think this is why we don't really have to worry about the overpopulation of the Earth. Because when the Earth becomes overpopulated, do you know what us humans do? We invent mobile phones. And we leave our children outside shops. And we balance over... like, how far down is that? Giant wells. Giant wells to take the perfect photo.
I mean... oh, no. Wait, hang on. She's on top of someone else's shoulders.
Oh my gosh, that, and I thought that the greenery in the background was the ground, but it's not. This is a tall building.
Yeah.
And she's balanced on someone's shoulders.
Yeah. With holding a selfie stick.
I just think it's one of those things where you go, it's never going to happen to me. It's never going to happen to me. And then do you know what? It's one of those, you know, have you seen those like, oh fuck moment videos?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the moment she realised she'd fucked up. Literally, what do you think they're thinking at that last moment of their life? Oh, I shouldn't have taken that fucking selfie. Can you imagine really all of these people standing in like purgatory or limbo land going, oh, did you take a selfie as well? Yeah, man.
Are there any more pictures?
I bet they go and have a conversation about what the picture was.
Nah, there's no more pictures.
It's just so shit as well, yeah. If you don't even have time to post it. If your phone falls down the well as well. Well, I didn't even know what this is, some kind of cave or abyss.
Yeah, something like that. Something where you're not, you shouldn't be stood on someone else's shoulders, right at the edge of it, trying to take a picture.
I just get so frustrated by things like this.
Wait, it's on top of a 180 meter high chimney in Romania.
I mean, so this person didn't die. But this is an example of the kind of selfie that's taken. Yes. Okay.
Thrill seekers.
I think it's interesting because I was watching Scream Queens. I don't know whether you've
seen
it.
That, yeah.
Yeah, it's so gory, isn't
awesome.
It? But there's that moment where Ariana Grande's character is like being murdered and she's still typing on her laptop like, I'm being killed, help me, ... oh, he's stabbing me, help me, ...
Oh, that's brilliant.
And I think it's an amazing, you know, it's a comical observation of the kind of society we live in nowadays.
Yeah, that's why I love it so much.
And I don't know, I've been going to lots of like improvisational jams all summer. And I remember before I moved to Paris, so I moved to Paris last September, so I've already surpassed the year anniversary of when I left. And I can't believe how much I just opened up there and gained perspective, and I think it's such a beautiful thing. Because I just didn't realise, you don't realise how closed off you become until you open up again. And when I came back and I had conversations with people that I'd, you know, hadn't seen since the last time I saw them before I left, I was like, oh my gosh, wow. You know, I really felt the change in myself. And okay, I mean, I'm going to be the first one to say that, you know, if I've got a really busy creative day and I'm meeting up with loads of people, I do need to be on my phone and I do need to be sending emails and making things happen. But I just validate that and I allow that because, you know, I'm not with anyone. I've got a day of stuff to do and I'm just being quite introverted and like getting on with my stuff. But it does, you know, I've said I'm from a family of 10. When we're sitting around the table and everyone's just got that add-on to their body.
I know, right?
Since when did a phone become like a piece of you?
It's strange, yeah.
It's just there the whole time. It's there.
I was actually thinking about it as I was walking down the road. It's because funny now, like, phones they were huge, then they got smaller, and now they're big again. And I'm walking down the road holding my phone in my hand, and then I'm looking ahead and someone else is walking with their phone in their hand, and I'm like,
oh my gosh,
shit.
It's so true.
Like, we can't even put our phones in our pockets. They're so big, it feels uncomfortable. So it feels more comfortable to just
like it's some kind of purse or like
that's exactly what it feels like. It's so weird,
like when you got your purse at the ready to be able to pay with the contact. I mean, sometimes people have their Oyster cards in do you have that? You have your Oyster in your phone.
Makes life easier. If I lose my phone, I lose my Oyster.
I saw this really interesting, this photographer had explored the idea of I honestly can't remember the name, but they took photos of people embracing or sitting next to each other, but also holding their mobiles, except the mobile phone wasn't there anymore. So it was these really interesting compositions of these lovers embracing, but that kind of absence in their connection with each other, as well as the way that their hand was placed, as if they'd been holding a mobile phone. And I thought it was such an interesting observation about, you know, everything we've been talking about. And I don't know, I remember one time I made a conscious decision. I'd left O2 phone company because I was having trouble with them a couple of years ago. And I was like, right, I'm going to get a £10 flip up. It was like a flip up Alcatel One Touch or something. And I remember the first phone call I'd made on it, because I'd had a smartphone for ages. And I called my friend Liz and I was like, hello, are you in there? Oh my gosh, it's so small. And I felt like one of those girls from 90210, like, hey, like flipping it up, and it just was all plasticky. And I need to have a week or a couple of days where I do that, I think, to swap my SIM card. I mean, yeah, I'm still gonna be paying like 60 quid, which is crazy, by the way, 60 quid for my contract. I think for my health-wise, it's important to have those moments where you slip your SIM card into like a little, Alcatel One Touch, and you have those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, Liz, I can still hear you even though this is the tiniest thing ever. I've always loved the idea of what being on a phone with someone feels like, and the fact that your two voices are existing in this space, kind of like the Matrix. You know, if you were going to go into a dark space and you'd be like, oh, hey, or what's that new Netflix drama with the young girl who's got her hair shaved?
I don't have Netflix, so I don't
know. Oh no, it's the listeners will know. There's like, you know, that Netflix thing with that girl. It's so bad, but it's got like the 80s vibes. What was I even talking about?
I'm not sure.
My brain does this. The Matrix and Matrix, the external room. Basically, I always imagine talking on the phone with someone as if your bodies have been teleported to this parallel universe where you're both in the in-between. I call it the in-between. Yeah. I've always found it really interesting.
Like purgatory, interesting. Kind of.
Yeah, exactly. But I found it was interesting, the difference between the two purgatories, the Alcatel One Touch purgatory and the iPhone 7 purgatory. I kind of like the edge of the Alcatel One Touch purgatory. Maybe that will be my next poem.
I always find it interesting that, like, you could be in a room with like multiple people, and you all like be in the same space, but everyone would be on their phone. The TV might be on, but everyone would be on their phone, like doing something, Instagram, whatever, and no one's kind of talking to each other. And it's I don't know, I see it as normal now because I've grown up into it. Like, I've seen the divide from like when we went from dial-up internet to like
the Royal Festival Hall. The performance will continue in 5 minutes.
So it is the Royal Festival Hall.
I
thought we were in the South Bank Centre. I'm just going to own that right now. Sorry, so people being on their phones.
Everyone's on their phones in the same room. No one's talking or to each other.
Yeah.
But they're talking to other people.
I know, it's like, why don't you just fucking call them up then? Bring their ass down here. Why the fuck are they at home? It's so true though, but I feel like, oh my God, it was so awkward. I went out with my family. Where were we? We went to see Mamma Mia, the musical, and it was amazing. But I remember we were sitting around this circular table at a Chinese restaurant after we'd spent like an hour deciding on where to go. It's already 11:30 at this point and I'm like tearing my hair out. And I just didn't have anything to say. To my family.
I know what you mean.
And I mean, you know, I feel bad if they listen to this, but like, I just was searching everywhere in my brain, and I don't believe in finding things to say. But all of us were kind of, our mind was somewhere else, and I just wonder whether that has anything to do with what you're saying about people being in the same space. And
but is it because, did it feel bad that you didn't have anything to say?
Yeah, because I wanted to share with them, but I felt like because you know, now, like you say, it's so normalised to have your phone at the dinner table. I find that my ability to converse with people, this, for example, it's getting harder and harder for me, with my family anyway. But I know that I feel like it's a mutual thing that not everyone is 100% present in the situation. I call it like screen brain or like phone brain when I've been on my phone too long and I feel like I can see blue lights and I just get a headache. I must be some kind of like, I'm not a technophobe, but I remember this lady I saw on like some kind of a documentary and she literally couldn't do electricity.
In the Royal Festival Hall, the performance will continue in 3 minutes.
Thanks for that, because I'd almost forgotten that we're at the Royal Festival Hall. So I just needed to know that the performance was, should we go to the performance?
I haven't got a ticket.
Oh, we'll find a way in.
Just going with the crowd. I don't
know, matrix it. Go into the purgatory. Dum bum bada. Oh no, that's Mission Impossible. Fuck.
It is.
So phones in, you know, communal spaces and stuff. I actually bonded with one of my this is great, I'm talking about my problems with my family, my ex-boyfriend. What else is next? When I first became friends with my friend.
Yeah. Of course. Who else would you have became friends with?
My non-friend. We were discussing exactly that, sitting in a room, and at the time I'd had my Alcatel One Touch, so I was very super present and aware of everything that was going on around me. But it is this idea of the phone becoming an extension of people's body, and I think it's something that we shouldn't normalise, and we should try harder to, I don't know, play that game at the dinner table where everyone piles up their phone and whoever takes it first has to pay, or find ways to kind of cleanse. It's crazy, you know, you have detoxes, you have juice cleanses and fasting, but now we have to go on phone cleanses. Like, what is that?
Like, I go on cleanses of replying to people.
Yeah. Oh, I just don't reply anyway.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh.
Don't call me. Well, do call me, actually. Call me, because I'll pick up. But don't message me on social media.
Don't message me, because sometimes I'm just like, reply, but I'm doing something.
Yeah, like, I'm living my life, yo. Like,
but,
it's so true.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
The Royal Festival Hall. The performance will continue in 1 minute.
I really think she wants us to go to the performance. Is the thing as well, self-checkout machines are worrying me. Because I started having conversations with these people. She'd be like, please take your bag. Please take your bag. Please. And I'm like, okay, I swear at her. I'm like, okay, bitch, calm down. I'm taking my stuff. And then you've got the security guard just staring at me like I'm a crazy person.
Speaking of automated things, mm-hmm. How do you feel about what they're called? Do you know when you call up like customer services and you get forwarded to like the automated person?
Yeah.
I really hate that. I just really want to talk to a human.
Please. Please say yes if you have X, Y, Z. Yes. No.
Like, I mean,
no, bitch. Listen to me.
I literally preferred it when I just had to press a button for yes or no. Now this talking thing.
In the World Festival Hall, the performance is about to continue.
I really, really think we should go.
Like this talking thing, like there was this I tried to call up HMR Revenue, that's where
it was.
Oh
my god.
I was trying to find out about VAT. I was trying to find out about VAT, right? And this automated system is like, where should we direct you? And I was just like, I want to talk to a human. Can I?
You just start talking to them. Or those voicemails that people used to make, where they'd be like, hello. Hello, it's me. And you start having a conversation with them. It was like one of those joke fucking voicemails.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, hey, it's so good to... And then, please.
I did one of those. Bitches. It was awesome. I planned the timing.
Oh, no, sorry. You're going to have to put a little tag on this that says vile language from Aya. Like,
oh, no, it's okay.
I think I'm blinding over here.
You can swear all you want.
Okay, this is quite expressive.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
You know, it's the day of expression.
Yes, it is.
Although you should express yourself every day. No, I do have problems with self-checkout machines, though, on that note. And, like, you're right. Like, I want to have that oh, there's the most lovely girl who works in the Wimbledon Tesco's. And she's been there like 5 years now, and she just knows my whole family. And I want that. I want that level of I want that girl in my life. Hi, Aya, how you doing? Good, just on another mad one. No one's talking to each other. Don't want to go to Mamma Mia again.
I mean, there are some beauties to self-checkout. Sometimes I just don't want to talk to anyone.
Yeah, but for the ease and speed.
But there's sometimes when it takes longer. Like, sometimes I'll put my stuff in the checkout and you'll tell me I've got too many items, but I haven't put anything
please
more.
Please take your item out of the bag, Nuri. Please take your item out of the bag. Shut up!
You know?
When you don't want to talk to anyone and you start talking to the fucking self-checkout machine. Oh, I remember when I went to Pyrenees in year nine. I went to the Pyrenees in year nine for like a walking trip,
yeah,
a hiking trip, and we had this talent show at the end of the week, and how was I? I was 13. Yeah, so kind of self-checkout machines were like coming in. This was 6, 7, 8 years ago. And I remember we did this whole Asda sketch. Well, this sketch based around Asda, the shop, and we like put all these little scenes together, and it started with us miming like supermarket trolleys, and it was like, and as we're like miming taking stuff on the shelves, my other friend came forward to me and was like, boop 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 boop. It was so jokes, but we were like dressed in these like orange color. Why am I talking about this?
I don't know. What colour was it again?
It was green. Oh. Asda is green, guys, in case you didn't know. And also, don't just gravitate towards the green shop, because otherwise you might end up a Waitrose. And the only thing that's good price there is their free coffee.
Free coffee at Waitrose?
Yeah, but you have to bring your own cup now, you know. But it's good,
that's
though. Because they're all... nothing. but anyway, when I went hiking in the Pyrenees... We had this talent show.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole self-checkout had just come in, so I thought we'd glorify that. That's where that was going. Oh. Makes no sense now. Good things come out of self-checkout.
Me an interesting listen back, I guess.
Oh, gosh.
What is the next one?
I don't know, what other random thing do I want to say next?
Oh, yeah, this is random.
Wonderful.
So, I like the weird section on a Metro News page.
I just love this guy's feet already. 49-year-old woman. Oh, it's a woman. It's a woman, guys. Yeah, it's a woman.
So this 49-year-old woman says she makes thousands by posting pictures of her feet on Instagram.
Yes, queen. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean... they're quite enjoyable.
Pretty tasteful.
Good,
yeah.
Good sizing.
Yeah.
Do you get feet models? I'm sure you do.
Probably, but she said that Gwyneth Lee, 49. It says she's a part-time dominatrix, and she claims to earn around $2,500 a month.
Oh my god!
Taking pictures of her feet and sharing them on Instagram.
Sexy feet. That's insane. I mean, is it just how bizarre it is that people want to just understand? Is it one of those things where, like, I don't know, people hate so much something so much they love it?
I guess it's just a fetish. I mean, like, have you heard about the people on YouTube that are making incredible amounts of money by, like, these weird niches like whispering or like stuff like that? Like,
whispering?
People, there's videos, check out on YouTube. I don't know, I can't remember what they're called, but like there's videos of...
I'm gonna go check out some videos on YouTube. Is that a niche? Whispering?
Literally, there's people...
I mean, it is nice, like... whispering is quite rather enjoyable. Sometimes I took lots of like comfort, like, because I have dyslexia. When I would read, Nice. It's good to know about each other.
Superpowers.
Yeah, exactly. Words would get so jumbled in my brain that I would sit in my room, and I find it really tiring to have to read out loud for long periods of time, so I would whisper, so I'd whisper my... But then apparently that's more strenuous for your voice anyway, so you never win, do you?
I like audiobooks though, that's what
I do. Oh yeah, I didn't think about that. Stephen Fry audiobooks of Harry Potter. We used to listen to them when we were kids, but the tape, you know when it finishes on one side, end of side one, and then it goes and you've got to jump out of bed before it clicks because otherwise it's so scary. Like, quick, change it over, someone change it over. Because we used to share bedrooms all the time because obviously I have so many family members.
Of course.
So someone would have to jump up and be like, quick, change the tape over before it clicks, it's so scary. End of side one. You got 5 seconds, go. Yeah, I love tapes, man. But this is the thing in my art at the moment. I'm really trying to... because I'm a singer-songwriter and I do lots of poetry in my... I embed poetry in both English and French into my work.
Oh, that's cool.
Thank you.
So are you fluent in French?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it was probably because I studied it in college, but I keep on saying college, but in school, in secondary school, in primary school. But actually living and working in the country, just like being around actual people and being around the language all the time, it was amazing to me. I was like, this is so cool. I have so many words in my head. I don't even understand. I mean, that's the complexity of the human brain, obviously. But I just love, I want to say organic things. I mean, a tape is made out of fucking plastic. It's not exactly organic. But those things that you can really touch and connect with, and that's something that I am striving for in my work, is to have that real connection with people. Because with the introduction of phones and with the introduction of more accessible music and stuff, which is actually, I'm studying at the Notting Hill Academy of Music at the moment, and it's something that's really, we're talking about a lot in our lectures, is that, yes, music's more easily accessible, but, you know, the skip rate on Spotify for someone to click skip to music is so high, because people are just, you know, we're called the bored generation. People, like you said, they're watching films, and they're on their phone at the same time, they're at the dinner table, and they're not connecting with people. So people don't have time. People don't have 30 seconds of their life to listen to a rock introduction to a song anymore. They'll already have changed the song.
That's the best part. That's what hooks me to the song. Yeah. I'm just like, am I going to listen to this?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Okay, cool.
So,
we'll see how it goes.
In my work, I'm really looking for things like, okay, not tapes, but I love that people are now releasing modern songs on vinyl.
Yeah, exactly.
And going out and doing the gigs and connecting with that audience, I think it's so, so important.
I went to So Far Sounds
Oh my god, I bet it was amazing.
Friday, it was amazing because my friend was performing. That's the only reason why I had no
because obviously it's like a, I wouldn't say like a rave, but they dropped the address like a couple of hours before,
so
didn't they?
In how it works is is you like, you buy your ticket, you don't know who you're going to go and see perform, mm-hmm. but you know you're going to see three acts. It could be three singers, it could be instrumentalists,
oh
it could
God.
Be poets, it could be anyone. Yeah. So then you get there and it's usually about like kind of close, confined places, like usually at someone's house or mm-hmm. something like that. The one I went to was in like one of those old factory warehouse things that they've turned into a house.
I love that.
And my friend, his name is Matthew One Man.
Okay.
He is a guitarist and loopist.
So you're saying.
So he like plays a guitar. Oh, actually, I'll show you a video afterwards.
Yeah, please do.
He plays a guitar and does the loops with his feet. I'll show you right now, actually, because it's fucking cool.
I love stuff like that. Like last night, I went to a jam that I always go to, which you should check out. It's at the Love Shack every Wednesday.
Okay.
Bethnal Green. And
SNS Poetry?
No, it's just a jam that this guy Nathan set up over summer, because he'd gone traveling and he'd been doing the two-step dance by a speaker one time, and this lady had come up to him and said, mate, like, you've got this facility, you've got your whole body, don't be doing the two-step when you could just like really explore. And ever since then, he said he's just been really inspired to just explore everything. So he set up these jams every single Wednesday in Victoria Park. We'd stay till like 1, 2 in the morning just jamming and playing music, whole drum circle of people. And anyway, I went to the Love Shack last night, which is now where it's situated because it's getting colder and it's got to be indoors. And there's like Love Bar lattes and vegan food, and it's so, everyone's so friendly. And that as well is interesting. At the jams, I remember more people's names than I do in my regular everyday life.
Yeah.
And it's because we take the time to have that connection with each other. I do have this problem though, where I have a really shiny brain, and if someone shakes my hand, I'll be thinking about the texture of their skin as opposed to what they're saying. So I literally that came out really wrong.
But
like, if I hug someone, I'll be thinking about what their t-shirt feels like, or because my brain just is more about textures as opposed to words. I don't really know where I'm going with this. This is going to happen. This is going to keep on happening, guys. So I went to the Love Shack. It was amazing. But I was like at the jam for 10 minutes. My mate, Mary, oh, she's amazing. She was like, look, I'm going to this gig. Laura Mishka's playing at Scala London. And I was like, oh my gosh, I really want to come, but also like I gotta stay, but I want to come. She was like, okay, I'm abducting you. So she took me to this gig, and Laura Mishk, oh my, I don't know how to say it. Tom Mishk, Laura Mishk, Laura is Tom Mishk's younger sister.
Okay.
But I don't know whether it's Mishk or Mishk or
Mishk. Are you talking about the artist, Tom?
Yes, yes, oh, okay. Exactly. Sorry, I should have specified. But apparently, I don't specify what I'm talking about, but I'll go and talk about the texture of someone's skin.
This
is the kind of detail I do mention.
I've heard of this guy.
But she was an amazing artist. She used lots of sounds to portray her emotion, to express her emotions. And at one point, there was just this wall of sound. And it was amazing. She was using things like loops and her saxophone, and it was the most incredible thing. And I just felt really detached this month. But I suddenly, all of my senses, I've learnt this new word. It's called horripilation.
Okay.
And it's where you're like, hairs on your arms stand on ends. It's kind of like goosebumps.
Okay.
But just pretentious. Just kidding. It was really great. Horripilation. Horriphony. Horriphony. Anyway, sorry. Show me your friend. He sounds really great.
Oh, this is actually an ABBA.
Obviously, it's an ABBA because
it did change to something that I didn't.
See, Ben Folds composes. We'll watch that later, Ben Folds. He's not wearing any shoes.
Yeah, he does barefoot, and he does the loops with his feet.
Wow. So this is Matthew One Roots. So far, London. Wow. Yeah, and Florence from Florence and the Machine. She doesn't wear shoes on stage because she wants to feel connected to the, you know, to the earth. More control over your movements.
But it's cool at SoFi Sounds because it's like, it's all about the connection.
Yeah.
And it's about kind of being on your phone. They urge you not to be on your phone or recording it. Like, if you're going to record it kind of for social media, just do like 15 seconds away and put your phone away.
That's awesome. I really respect that.
Session I was at, everyone was so engaged with everything else.
It just makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And also, it's, you know, if you're on your phone and someone else is really engaged, then they in turn won't be engaged because that's distracting for them. So I think there should be these kind of rules in live music events, and I think it's important to just stay present.
Okay. Also, it kind of makes this event kind of feel like you've actually paid for something, as opposed to you can go to someone's live event and then you might see on YouTube like 2 weeks later or something like that, and you're just like, oh, I went and saw this live, and now it's, I guess it's not the same, but
it
still,
takes away some of the, because I know in Berlin they have lots of rules about using their phones in clubs, And I think it just aids a really good time doing that. They sometimes put stickers over people's phones and cameras. And I think we should do that. Because I think it just keeps people engaged. So awesome.
He's mainly been playing at like festivals over summer and stuff like that. But
he's been
doing a lot of so far sound events over the last year or so. And
that's really nice.
He just so happened to be in the area. Mm-hmm. My best friend is his driver. So like I met him through my best friend anyway.
Awesome.
And like they were driving through my area and my mate was like, oh, this is where Corey lives. And Matt was like, well, why don't you invite him? Because he gets 2 free tickets to his so far sound events. He gives one to Ben, his driver, and then he gave the other one to me. And I just so happened to be like 30 minutes walk away. So wow. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go and go.
This is kind of what I'm doing at the moment, just like really, you know, like I said, I've been doing the jams all summer and just meeting people and just not feeling pressured to release anything before I'm ready. Because I think it's a beautiful thing to nurture your sound.
I'm doing exactly the same with music production. I make beats and stuff.
I mean, why are we not, we should collaborate. Like, what are we doing? Sick.
But like, I don't know, I don't have them anywhere because for me, it's like, when I make this beat, it's like, I don't know, it's my baby.
Yeah.
And I want to be in the room when it's being like whatever's happening on it because
as a songwriter I completely understand,
because I don't know,
you don't want someone to nurture it in the wrong way.
Yeah, and it feels like some music nowadays is kind of, you have that disconnect where the producer will make the beat, he'll send it to the artist will spit on it, then he'll send it to the next artist might have written something, and then they hear what my man spat on the first verse, they're like, oh shit, might need to change this.
Yeah.
And then it loses kind of that natural flow of just making a song or collaboration, the collaboration element that makes it beautiful.
Have you ever done some of your poetry of your beats?
Yeah, and that's what I'm working on at the moment.
Sweet.
I'm working on a mixtape.
Okay, well I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
What kind of, like, are you only using, like, is there a through line in what you're doing?
Maybe, once I figure out all the content that's going on it, but like at this moment in time, the reason why it's a mixtape is like it's just a mash of songs or
I love that.
Poems that I've
See,
written
that
over
feels
the beat.
Really organic to
or,
me.
That was the word I was looking for.
Organic! We love organic!
But yeah, it's
eat
just,
organic, play organic, be organic.
I made a track because I sing as well, so I've
so nice.
I've got a song that I don't know if I'm gonna rap or sing or spoken word mix of the two over it, and I've sent it. When I made the when I was making the beat, I had like I've heard some of. Have you heard Broken Pen?
Broken Pen by Lil.
No, the poet Broken Pen.
Oh no! sorry, I thought it was a song.
I know. It's a poet called Broken Pen.
Okay.
He's absolutely amazing with like wordplay and metaphors. He's got like this great poem where he does, do you know, like Papoose does the A to C, like he does just spits bars, but every word he does of the alphabet like that, but he done it in a poem. It was just fucking amazing.
Mate.
So like I've heard him, I've hung out with him, I've done a podcast with him, and I was listening to a couple of tracks that he's made. So like when I was making this beat, I was just like, he would be perfect for this song.
Yeah.
So I hit him up and I was like, yo, I've got this song.
Yes.
I finished making the beat over the weekend. I was like, I'm halfway through writing it. I'll send it over to you. He loved the beat. And then it's just a matter of, he was like, how does it sound? How many bars do you want me to write? But I don't know about bars and stuff. I just know the space. Like first verse, chorus, I know the spaces. I just kind of feel, I've done a mock version of the song, sent it to him with his gap.
That's so sick. It's so nice when I think the most valuable lesson I ever learned about writing music was to let people in on your journey.
Yeah.
Because it can only add to what you already have.
I know.
And I think it's so important, like moving to a different country and gaining some perspective on London and now being back and really appreciating where I live, which obviously I feel sad that I did before, because other people don't have the same opportunities. So it was important. It was such an important time in my life for many reasons. But it's so important to have that perspective about your music and your creative work. We obviously met at Poetical Word. I met the guy that I play with, so Alex, AB is his artist name. He plays piano for me whenever I perform at gigs. And I met him 4 years ago at Poetical Word when it was at Lawrence's place in Richmond. And they had pillows all over the floor and living with his parents, and all the people would pour in the door and we'd just sit, and Q would, like, we'd do meditating. And it was really cool. But I met him during, like, the interval between two halves, and Alex was playing the most amazing classical piano. And I went over and I was just like, la 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 la, like singing over the top. And he was like, who are you? And I was like, who are you? Anyway, we lost touch. And when I got back from Paris, I just got a message from him. And we've just been vibing and growing with each other ever since. And so that was like 4 months ago when I got back, 4 or 5 months ago? Yeah, when I got back from Paris. And it's just amazing, like, when the juices are flowing, when you have that, like, creative collaboration with people. I mean, this podcast is kind of the same. It's a creative collaboration, even if it's not in the same format. I think it's really beautiful to think about creativity like that.
Yeah. I can't remember where this started.
You're fine with me. That happens to you. It's very contagious. I end up having these really wild conversations with people because I'm just like, you know, talking about 10 things at once. And I apologize.
No, I do exactly the same thing. Like, I'll start talking about one thing, then that thing will lead me on to thinking about something else, and that will go into that story, and I'll be like, oh shit, I didn't even finish this story.
Yeah.
And I'm going on to the next story.
And like,
then you jump back to this one, and it will like, wait, hang on, where are we?
Honestly, I was in a lecture and I was talking about how initially I didn't connect with David Bowie, which is crazy to me now, but I just heard one of his songs for the first time and I thought, there's no structure, I don't understand. Like, I was really expecting first chorus, you know, bridge, repeated chorus. And it was just, cool, yeah. It was something else. And I was going, oh my God, like, secretly, I would never say I don't like David Bowie, because I probably, like, I didn't want to seem like inferior by having that opinion, because you do get that with some things. But my dad said to me, he used to come back from nights out, he'd buy a whole loaf of white bread and peanut butter and jam, and just lay on his bed, eat like 3 or 4 sandwiches of peanut butter and jam, and just listen to David Bowie's album. And that's when he really was appreciating the music, because again, back to the connection thing, back to being able to connect with the audience, back to skipping on Spotify, there's a real through line in all the things that we've been talking about. And you know, going and consciously buying a loaf of bread and having peanut butter and jam sandwiches and listening to David Bowie, that's where I want people to be with my music. I want people to listen to my poetry. That I've written something called Orange, which I'm really excited about.
I've heard it.
Yeah, at the last Poetical Word. That was cool. Thanks.
You've done the poem at the first one that I met you.
Yeah.
And then the
progression.
Song version. I was just like, oh.
What do you think of the song?
It's different to the poem.
Yeah.
But it's like kind of the essence of what the poem is about. If that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Thank you, that's really nice. I'm building a body of work around it. So for those of you listening, it will hopefully be out in 6 months' time. But I want to create this organic buzz. I want people to go out and buy a loaf of, well, I wouldn't be white bread anymore, it'd be something like sourdough or rye. I want you to go buy some sourdough and some avocado and listen to my tune called Orange and appreciate it. But I think there are certain artists that are harder to access. And you've got to give them the time and build that rapport with them. Even if you can't see them, or you've got to give people time. I think it's important.
Like, have you heard of this artist called, what's his name, Alan Raymond?
No, I haven't.
He's an R&B singer.
Okay.
I really love him because he's like he's like me, like, in the sense that I don't like to give people context on my poetry.
Yeah.
I would prefer, I'm more interested in other people's perception as opposed to...
I completely agree with that. I think I wouldn't be one of those people to go, and this song is about, because you're sharing a story, but you want it to resonate in people however they want it to resonate within them, because it's not about you. It's about them and that connection and that meeting the audience halfway. Yes, being vulnerable and letting them in on your stories, but also allowing them to relish in theirs.
Yeah, but like, it's just the fact that he hardly talks. I don't know what's going on with my throat.
Oh, no, it's okay, don't worry. That was so ironic as well. He hardly talks.
Yeah, he hardly talks. And then, like, I listened to a live set of him on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he just literally just plays song after song. And it's just like...
Without okay, any bits in between.
Maybe he might announce this, the name of the title of the song or whatever. But he just plays and it's just... It's just nice to experience it that way. And he is on social media, but he doesn't, because he doesn't really talk much, he doesn't really post much, he rather let the music do the talking for him.
Yeah.
So as far as the music takes him.
That's really interesting. I guess it just comes down to what kind of an artist you are. I definitely pick my moments to talk about random things, no. I pick my moments, you know, in between songs, for example, to if I feel like I need to express something, I will. I just kind of flow with the set, see how it's going. But I like to have that. I like to let people in a tiny bit more.
Yeah.
But I mean, not talking in between your songs doesn't mean you're not letting people in. Like you say, it's a different experience, and maybe I'll try that one time to not say anything else, but just express the music.
Yeah.
See what perception comes from that. I think it'd be really interesting.
Yeah. What is the other topics on news? Did you hear about Charlie Slough leaving the BBC?
Yes. I did.
Well, I mean, I saw that I saw his post on Instagram yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was like, thanks to the BBC for giving him 10 years.
Yeah.
And he thanked certain people within the BBC that helped nurture and progress his career and stuff like that. But I didn't know that he was leaving the BBC to go to Apple Music, though. That's pretty cool.
Oh my gosh. I mean, are they okay with that?
I mean, hey man, he worked there for 10 years. He gave them, like, he was like, what's his name? Tim Westwood. When Tim Westwood was popping and back at the BBC and helping kind of bridge the gap between urban music, unfortunately. I mean that in the sense that I find this interesting. I was talking to... It's just making me think of diversity within the BBC.
Yeah.
Because I was talking to someone that I met randomly on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I was doing a house viewing and the person never turned up. What was worse was I arrived to the property early because the owner of the property said that there was a problem getting in the door. It's like stuck or it's really hard to open the door. They sent me instructions on how to, what key to put in first and everything like that. So I was just like, oh shit, but I've been here before. Like the door's a bit stiff, but it's not hard. So like I got there early to try and open this door.
Yeah.
The door just flew open. I'm not like there was no difficulty opening the door at all. So I was just like, there was no reason for me to get here early.
Yeah.
Then the guy never turns up. I call him and apparently he called my boss, the agent, but he got no response. He couldn't get through to him, so to let him know that he wasn't gonna turn up.
Yeah.
I spoke to my manager. My manager said, well, I had no missed calls, so clearly he just never turned up.
Yeah.
So I was walking back through Limehouse Market and they were setting like this broadcast thing outside up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking to this lady. She was doing a thing where they were just talking to people. It was a live broadcast / podcast where they were talking to people within the community about the community.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned that I was working for Purple Brick. She wanted to kind of find out a little bit more about like the property or what I knew about the property market. So I was like, yeah, sure. And then I mentioned the only reason why I went over there was just saw the mics. And I was like, I got a podcast. How yeah. What is this?
What?
So I mentioned my podcast. She was like, yeah, cool. You can come so on, sick. Plug your podcast and stuff like that. But then we were talking and she mentioned how she went to a radio and broadcasting conference a couple of weeks ago or so, and she said that she felt a bit uncomfortable when she was in the room and she looked around and everyone looked the same, is what she said. What she meant was, everyone was white, but it was interesting. And then she went on to say that even at the BBC, she said that she finds that the BBC are kind of unsure about where to look to kind of make their broadcasting service more diverse. This is what she said to me. She said that because they're even within the BBC, they're kind of feeling like they want to make it more diverse, but they're not sure where to look to find the talent to...
But it's... you know, just open the fucking door, man. Like, just open it. Hello? Come in.
I didn't say that at the time. I was just like, oh, you don't know. I wanted to say just, you know, just go somewhere, go to an event.
Can I ask was she the minority of the minority in the room?
She was.
And she's commenting on...
No, she wasn't the minority. She was... the majority. That's what she said. She said that her and a few other people felt uncomfortable that there wasn't more of
and
a mixed group.
And that they're not sure where to look.
And within the BBC, they said that they're not sure where to look to make this dive.
But it shouldn't be... It's a difficult one because it shouldn't be a case of going, okay, we need to fill a quota of people. That's crazy. Like, I've always felt that you should just have a really equal approach to it and... Hopefully, you know, the people who really deserve the jobs will get it. And I think naturally it will happen that you get a really nice diverse range of people because if you're really looking for diversity of mind, all the rest will follow beautifully. It's not a case of going, okay, we have to fill out a certain quota of people and then we'll look at people's minds and people's accomplishments. No, man, like, just be open-minded, full stop. Don't see the way that people look first. Look into their mind. I had the most beautiful moment where I was at this small family-run festival in Bicester, actually. It's called the Badger Fest, and it's been running for 9 years. It was started by four sisters who decided to put on a little festival.
The Badger Fest?
Yeah, a little festival when their parents were going on holiday, so they invited all their friends down. They have this really long, deep garden.
Does it involve badgers?
No. but I guess it's in the countryside or something. Well, it is in the countryside, but maybe that's the relation between... Anyway, they invited all their friends down, their friends brought tents and stuff, and then their parents turned around and said, we're not going away anymore. So they came clean about the fact that they had this plan for the festival, and their parents' response was, well, we want to get involved. So then it turned into, it's been going 9 years now, and they're going to do a winter one as well, which is really cool. But I was at this festival for the first time, and I met the gorgeous Ella at the open mics around Kingston, the cricketers, and so we used to frequent on a Sunday when I was like 15. It was awesome.
I think I've been to Kingston like 3 times.
It used to be my ends. But anyway, I'm at this festival and this guy Connor gets on the mic, and it was an open mic, and he's just playing all these blues riffs, and I was like, I really want to be up there. I'm gonna go up there. So I just got up and I was like, hey mate, can I share mics with you? Like, and I just got on one of the mics next to him and we just started vibing. And I hadn't spoken to him at all the whole evening. And the first thing he says to me after we get off the mic, he's like, oh my gosh, who are you? Like, it's crazy, I met your mind before I met you. And I feel like that should be the BBC's response to, I don't know where to look. Look into people's personalities and minds and the rest will follow suit.
Yeah.
I think I've always found it a struggle to understand, and it is a difficult one because, that being said, I don't know if you're looking into people's minds and then, it's a difficult one. It's like, you know, at my brother's school, they started including girls in the sixth form. And then they had a girl, head girl. And then they had a head boy. Obviously, they represented both parties, and I think that's really important. But it's always going to be difficult in situations like that, to be fair. And I don't really have an ultimate answer as to how to...
I know, it's okay. Yeah. I just thought it was interesting, the conversation. And you see on kind of the Tim Westwood or even Charlie Sloth, nothing against them, but they are white and they are playing more urban music, and it's the fact that they're playing it, making it kind of more acceptable in a sense.
Okay, I see what you mean.
It's not like there's... Now, there are loads of black and ethnic minority people working within the BBC in broadcasting, but
yeah,
it's just...
Why does it have to be...
Yeah, like...
These guys.
Yeah.
That make it...
Yeah, like, accessible. Why did it... I mean, it was, if it wasn't for the likes of Tim Westwood, it wouldn't have... Maybe playing these types of music on the BBC, it wouldn't have bridged, opened the borders, I guess.
Yeah.
But then it's just, why did it have to take him playing it to open it up? Why couldn't it have to...
I remember, we're talking about college, how one of, I can't for the life of me remember his name, but one radio presenter for the BBC doesn't like George Ezra.
Oh.
Who's, in contrast, a white artist. And even one radio presenter can have control as a gatekeeper, in inverted commas, over control over George Ezra being played.
Exactly.
So it is sad that then these guys become the gatekeepers to allow music to be accessible.
Yeah, that's why that was the birth of like pirate radio and stuff like that.
So. I love, have you seen The Boat That Rocked? Oh my gosh, it's one of my favourite films. You know, you're always going to love a song with your name in it, but there's this one song where she's coming over the water on a boat and she's coming to marry one of the guys on the pirate boat. And there's a song that's like, Elanoji, I think you're swell and you really do me well. You're my pride and joy, etc. And it's like so retro and vibing. And that's my real name, Eleanor. So,
So A is just your artist.
It's a pseudonym, yeah. I shouldn't really say that. I should keep it a secret. Oh my gosh, don't tell anyone.
I'm going to put this in the hashtags. I'm going to get those guys excited. What time is it? I mean, is there any other interesting cool news here? 4-day working. No. I mean, no.
So what inspired your poem for today's National Poetry Day?
I want to say that I could tell you, but I don't know. I just started saying to myself in my head, rainbows for rainy days.
Rainbows
for the rainy days, I think, was the first line.
That's a really nice imagery.
So I started seeing that, and I was just like, but then what makes... it's not just the rain that makes the rainbow, it's the fact that the sun's shining. So I think...
Maybe...
So I was just kind of making connections as I was writing along.
I mean, if you think of yourself as... having the ability to see the light...
Maybe.
In a situation that is rainy...
I guess,
then it will give you a bit of a rainbow.
Yeah.
So the sun is the light that allows the rainbow to come through even on a bad day. It's really nice imagery.
Yeah, I don't know, like words literally just come to me and I write it down and then I just think of how they can kind of connect in, I don't know, in a sense. And then I just write that and then think of how it rhymes and it just comes out. a lot of the time I don't know what I'm writing about. Mm-hmm. It sounds weird. Like, I say this to a lot of people, I feel possessed when I'm writing. It just literally just comes out and I'll read something back and I'm like, what is this? What is this
I can't
about?
Even read my writing. Because, yeah, I try and write poetry down in a book or whatever. I can't read my own writing, which is cool.
I just type it, but it's just sometimes I write things and I don't know exactly where it came from or what it's about right at that moment, but I read it a couple of times and I'm just like, oh, that's what I was writing.
Hello, meaning to what I was saying.
But like a lot of the time it just feels like I'm writing a jumble of random words that kind of don't make sense, but it kind of, when you read it back and you think of the imagery that I try and create imagery.
Yeah, no, that's
pictures,
really nice.
Stories, that's what I like to use to...
I think your poems, the last couple of times I've heard them, I've really connected with you. Not only as a performer, but in what you say, like your content. Proper horripilation everywhere. No, it's awesome, man. I would love to hear the rainbow come through when it's ready. And I mean, that's what they should have at the BBC. Rainbows. Rainbows, yeah. Man. Rainbows for days.
Rainbows for days, man.
Rainbow people.
But speaking of you and your performance, I have some questions.
Yeah, of course.
Since you mentioned, like, you're, like, from a big family.
Yes.
Like, are you the oldest, youngest, middle?
I am the ultimate middle child. I'm the first girl after four boys.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's been a journey, man. It's been a journey.
So was it like just girls after you?
Or? Yeah, so four boys and then four girls. And my mum has this dream that will be like the family von Trapp and we will wear lederhosen and sing at her birthday. Oh, my brothers refuse, obviously. I don't know, I think I quite like to wear lederhosen, to be honest. I'm kidding.
Are you from a performing family? Or?
So my brothers were, they all went to Westminster Abbey Choir School, actually. So I've only thought about it now, and I don't have any religious beliefs anymore. But when we did used to go to church when I was much younger, we'd go up and see my brothers kind of perform every Sunday. And it's only just dawned on me, my church was Westminster Abbey when I was younger. My regular church was Westminster Abbey. And we'd always come in late and we'd have to sit in that special box that was actually for the guy who swung the incense. And we'd all be sat in one box because we'd always be late everywhere. Ask me to be there two hours earlier and we'll get there on time.
What got you into music, like writing and... Or was it music that you started with? Did you start with another creative art before?
Well, I'm an artist as well. So like I said, with Orange, I've got a whole...
Painter?
Yes. I do collages and painting. I do lots of mixed media work.
Oh, that's cool.
I make clothes. Because like you were saying earlier, you don't want to tell people what your work is about, but I really like visuals.
Yeah.
And I think being able to give those little nuances and details towards an idea just allow for that accessibility into your work.
Oh, you sorry to cut you off, but create a alternative cover art for the podcast.
I would love that. I would love to do that.
Because that's a project that I'm kind of working on. I've got one coming soon.
Awesome.
I'm so excited.
I can see.
But I want to... kind of, because I just made a random, like, simple logo and that was the cover, but I don't have the patience to draw, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But I love art.
Yeah.
So I just want to see different artists, because everyone will have a different interpretation of my opinion means nothing. So I just want to see what different artists will come up with and what they will design.
Oh man, I'm there, I
and
can't wait to get involved.
Later, I'm going to do a documentary. Go back talking to these artists, find out what their opinion means.
That's so awesome. Well, yeah, I'm already 100% with you on the idea. I think it's great. But yeah, I mean, art has always been a huge part of my life. And sorry, I didn't really go into too much detail there, but my brothers are now all involved in medicine. Like you said, you work for the NHS on the sly. Love it. So yeah, my parents do that as well. So there's this whole mix of creative stuff, and at Christmas time we'll do like, I don't want to call it a recital, but we all get up and, you know, play something on the piano. Because I think my parents have always had a really healthy approach to creativity as well as academia. Like, I think the two really should go hand in hand. And yeah. Anyone who doesn't respect creativity as much as they respect academia. Like, I don't even like using those words because I feel like they're just on a spectrum of knowledge. Then
it, I mean, it if doesn't... I didn't have the creative side, it wouldn't help me pick
exactly,
up
because
the...
I just think they're interchangeable, really. But I've been very lucky. A friend of mine the other day was expressing how some of her family members still don't accept the fact that she's gay.
Oh.
And I had this moment where I was like, wow. Like the perspective I got when I was living in Paris and looking back and going, wow, I didn't appreciate where I lived. I don't appreciate how forthcoming and accepting my beautiful, crazy family are. And gosh, I feel like I'm almost, I don't want to gloat about it. Like, that's not what I want to do, but I just really, so much gratitude. Yeah, it's been really hard at times. You know, big family, there's always going to be big personalities and people who butt heads, but I wouldn't change them for a while, to be honest. But I started writing when I was 13.
Oh, shit, I forgot I asked that question.
No, I did too. That's why I slyly brought it back in there to the end. It's fine. I feel like there's been a through line in this beautiful disorder. When I was 13, I had my heart broken, and I was listening to Kate Nash at the time, you know, that song, and it's like, my fingertips are holding onto the cracks in our foundations, which actually kind of ties into the kind of like crazy disorderly family idea. But I just really loved, I remember learning the chords on the piano, and me and my sister would sing it, and then I learned the Hot Potato song, you know, it goes, and then I just was playing that on the piano and I started singing over the top. So I wrote a song over the top of the Hot Potato song chords, as you do.
Just on your spare time.
Yeah, and then I would come home every single day after school, and I had this amazing moment recently where I was sat at the piano with Alex and I said, oh my God, I still haven't named my piano, like my piano knows everything about me. And I was like, I think I'll call her Susie, like this, just really kind of just blasé. And I was like, Mom, how long have we had this piano? And she was like, oh, well, your grandma bought the piano for you. And my grandma was called Grandma Susie. And it was like, I don't even remember that, but it came afterwards. And I was like, oh my gosh. And there was just this moment where it all just came together. And I think it was a gift from the world. But yeah, it's just been it was a hobby for a really long time. And then I was watching Glastonbury a couple of years ago, and just the vibes and the energy and the ambience. And I was like, mate, I want to share my stories with people. It's, you know, like I was saying to you earlier, it's like, I'm using lots, I'm talking about lots of different things, but my friend Pat told me once that a lady came into his photographic shop and was like, it's really hard, Pat, because, you know, I'm reading a book and I'm really happy, and then I go out every day and I search for happiness and I can't find it, so then I go back home and I read my book. And he's like, are you happy when you're reading your book? And she's like, yeah, I'm really happy. And he's like, why stop looking for happiness? Stop looking. And I feel like that is like that with me with writing music. I was searching for my thing that made me happy, and I was really unhappy, and then I'd go into a music practice room at college or at school, and I'd have these moments and I'd write and express myself, and I'd be like, I'm so happy. And then I'd be like, I need to keep on searching for something else. Fuck off. Like, it's kind of the same thing, you know, and it's been there. It's been, you know, my piano has been sharing in all of these moments where I've needed to express myself over the teenage years, you know, the angst that we all have. Yeah, it's been a really important crutch for my self-development, my songwriting. And I'm really excited to share that with people.
What genre would you say, or do you not put yourself in a...
It's a difficult one because I do, like I said, embed spoken word in both French and English into my work, which is something I just love. I don't like there being that line between, because lyrics are poetry.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite artists is Joni Mitchell. And I was laying in Richmond Park listening to her songs, and it was just like the most perfect sunny day. And she said the line in California, which is, "Will you take me as I am, strung out on another man?" And I was like, oh my God, will you take me as I am, strung out on another man? And it's like the idea that you embrace new people into your life that you recognize will naturally have these affectations from their past, and who may still be in love with that person that got away. But what matters is that they're in a new moment with you, and they have a newfound love and respect for you, and you're sharing something that's nothing to do with all of those other affectations. I just think it was a really beautiful thing to accept that we all have our quirks, and we all have our baggage, and we all have our stuff. But as long as you can, I don't know, be present with a new person in a moment, accepting of each other's faults, which are actually beautiful in their imperfection. You can take each other as you are, strung out on other things, which you'll hopefully move through and flow through. But she's one of my greatest influences, so I do like what I like to call pop folk,
okay,
mixed with spoken word. And then I actually don't like to mention it too much, but I did musical theatre for 10 years.
Why do you like to mention it?
I don't know, because there's lots of baggage attached to... I don't want to create a negative image around it, but people kind of don't get the wrong impression about musical theatre, that it's all jazz hands and it's all like, "Don't tell me not to live, just sit and put up." Or that bit like in Friends when Phoebe from Friends goes like, "Oh, if life was a musical, I'd just be like, sun comes out bright and beaming." She does this line where she just goes into full musical theatre mode. And yeah, it is like that sometimes. It is classic, yeah. Musical theatre. I don't know, I think it's actually taught me the one thing that I love so much about musical theatre was being the vehicle that carried the story from the play itself or from the musical itself to the audience.
Yeah.
And that's what I do when I perform, and when I perform my poetry, I'm channeling this story through me, and I'm connecting with people, and it is all part of the same thing. So that being said, I actually do have this more power ballad voice that comes through, so I'll do like light ethereal Joni Mitchell followed by power ballad, you know, and it always comes out in my improvisational jamming. Like last night when I was at the Love Shack, I was singing for like an hour, and people were dancing around the room, and I was just vibing with these guitarists. And at times I'll just let my voice rip, man, and then draw back, and it's playing with all these different colours. And yeah, sometimes I don't like to say that there's a specific genre that I stick to, because like the rainbows, and like seeing people's mind first, and like academia versus creativity. Just let it be, man. Just let it be. Let it resonate in each person how you want it to resonate within them. Let the sound speak for itself, because I think it's the... I did Meisner for a long time. It's an acting practice. And my lecturer said, let the words be the canoe on the surface and let the emotion be the river. It's like body language is 97%. And words are just 3%,
yeah,
of what you communicate. So, you know, like the canoe, which are our words, they're just floating on the surface of this bed of emotion. So I'm just hoping that whatever I'm doing, I'm channeling that emotion to the surface. Onto the canoe, yeah.
It's pretty beautiful.
All the analogies, all the analogies. Take what you want from it.
What music are you into? Like, what would be on your, I guess, your playlist? What, 5 songs?
Last Goodbye, Jeff Buckley. Love and Hate, Michael Kiwanuka. She by Laura Mavula, or Make Me Lovely, because the beat is just sick and she's a goddess. How many have I said? So Love and Hate, Make Me Lovely, Last Goodbye, Gypsy, Fleetwood Mac, and maybe a Loyal Khana song or a Tom Misch song. When I moved to Paris, you know, there's that whole, the mixtape that Tom Misch lost in Paris. And he's got this song, "You Know That I Need You Now," talking about the mixtape that he's lost and created a whole new album from that one thing, which is, you know, like finding the light on a rainy day.
Yeah.
Finding the goodness out of a situation, like something so bad as to lose all of your material. I was just vibing with it in Paris, so I guess, yeah, something like a Damselfly by Loyal Kano. Because he does the, you know, British spoken word rap, really inspired by his respective inspirations, like hip-hop from America, and that's made it his own thing. Yeah, I think of... Oh, and River by Joni Mitchell, before I forget. Oh my gosh, she uses this Jingle Bells motif in it. Listen to it, it's insane. She's so clever.
You've given me an idea for something, but I'll tell you later. Once.
Okay.
What was the next question? If you were to put together the perfect song with all your, I guess, your favorite artists to collaborate, what would be that collaboration?
As in, who would I collaborate with?
Who would you collaborate with? Yes. And
do they have to be alive?
Dead or alive. That was actually what I wanted. Dead
awesome. Or alive. oh gosh. Well, actually, the majority of the artists I'm going to say aren't dead. Oh man, so much choice. I guess dead would be Freddie Mercury.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
And David Bowie. Peace, guys. Love you. And alive would be Joni Mitchell. I think, yeah, Loyal Kana. Laura Mishk, who I saw last night. You know, the younger sister of Tom Mishk. And maybe my friend Puma Blue. He also works with like a similar crowd of people, like is friends with Tom Mishk actually. Because the thing is about these artists that I've mentioned is that I feel like they're creating a really organic sound that we're lacking at the moment.
Yeah, I do love Tom Mish.
And I feel, for a while I couldn't listen to new music because I feel like there was something I was really lacking. So I listened to like Supertramp and Beach Boys and David Bowie, Simon and Garfunkel, Joni Mitchell.
Fleetwood Mac,
yeah, Jeff Buckley. Oh my gosh, Stevie Nicks is a queen.
Yeah.
And then if you bring in these new organic artists like Puma Blue, like Tom Mishk, Loyal Kana, who are really, I just think grafting, trying to push. I don't want to be offensive to anyone. I know that everyone grafts in their own way. I love what's happening. I feel like there's a real buzz beneath the surface, and we're kind of going full circle. I feel like this is just my personal opinion, but I feel like last couple of years people have slightly lost their way in terms of music, but I don't know, maybe I just haven't been looking.
I don't, in what's maybe mainstream,
yes,
it feels like, oh my gosh, like what is that song by Lil Pump and Kanye West?
Oh god,
like what
this is what I mean. So maybe that's what it is, because I caught myself off guard with that comment just then, because I know that there's so much amazing music out there. There really is.
It's just what's
and there
mainstream,
will always be. But yeah, exactly. What's mainstream?
I don't know. I feel like back in the day, there was just so much more contentful music that was out there. Nowadays, it's just songs where someone can say Gucci Gang for the entire song and make millions.
What's that Funky Shark song? There's this song called like Funky Shark, and it's like Funky Shark do 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 do, Funky Shark do 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 do, and it's like what? But then it gets stuck in your head the whole day. Anyway, I digress. But
that's probably it. People are like, I hate this song, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang. Oh man, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang.
Some form of Tourette's, like. Yeah, I think the people I would want to collaborate with would be more, for lack of a better word, technical, organic artists. But I feel so guilty because I know that everyone has their own individuality and I respect that so much. I respect however people want to express themselves. It's always valid to me. So my brain's difficult sometimes because I always, you know, it becomes hard to have opinions because I just fob it off as, but everyone's allowed to express themselves in their own way because they are. And even if mainstream stuff is shit, there will always be someone vibing.
Yeah, exactly. What did you write your first song about?
One of my first ever songs was actually about, at the time I was playing with Bratz Dolls. Bratz Dolls and Barbies and my scene, and my sister and I in our attic had this Barbie village that we built. And I had this one Bratz doll called Gogo, and she was like a Japanese style doll. And she had these really cool yellow and orange like braids in her hair, and the detachable feet and the changing shoes and the little plastic handbag with like Tokyo patterns on it. And I didn't even know what I wanted to do at this point, but I think it's interesting how really early on you can be already doing things that you don't even know that you'll grow up to still be connected with. But I wrote this song and it goes, girly girl from Japan, girly girl from Japan, girly girl from Japan. Bling, bling goes a telephone. It's my boyfriend, Tokyo. Beep, I pick up the phone. Hey, yo, Tokyo. Hey, yo, Tokyo. Bring, ding, 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 ding. Yo, yo, Tokyo. How you doing, y'all? I'm fine, Mary J. What's the buzz in your place? I'm digging my brother Joe. That was the song. There we go. The shame. That was me in year six, man. I thought I was the coolest thing ever. I had my Bratz doll, I had my Barbie village. That was my first inspiration. It's right there.
Oh, now I get what you mean. I thought you meant Bratz was the name of your band. Sorry,
Bratz. No, Dolls. Bratz. I just shared that. That just happened. Live it, love it, learn from it. In connection with that, though, the coolest thing happened when I was in Paris. I saw these Reebok trainers, lavender in colour, or lilac, the most beautiful colour. I saw them and I was like, oh my gosh, this is my favourite colour. This is my favourite colour. And at this moment where I was like, oh my God, how did I not know that this was my favorite color? Anyway, I bought the shoes, 35 quid in the sale, perfect. Go back home for a weekend from Paris, and I'm like talking about these shoes, and I'm like, hang on. And I go and I open my attic door, and I open the door wide open, and then I was like, oh my God, when I was 10 or 9 or whatever, my parents were like, oh, Els, you know, we just got some spare paint left, we're gonna paint the attic.
Okay.
We've got, you know, some spare funds or whatever. What colour do you want it? And I was like, I want it lilac. That's what I said. And at the time I remember thinking, why have I asked for this colour? I'm not even sure I like it. But you know, 10 years later, I'm like seeing these lilac trainers and going, I really like this. Going, this is my favourite colour. And 10 years ago, I asked for this colour to be painted in the attic for the Barbie village. You know? Styling. So I feel like I've just really reconnected with myself. And small things like that just make me smile because, like playing the piano every day and going, "What? Where's my happiness? I don't know where it's at. What makes me happy?" And playing the piano every day. Like, what am I doing? And going, oh, what's my favourite colour? And it's under my nose the whole time. So I think the best way to find things is to stop fucking looking. My second song was after my first breakup when I was 13, 14. And it was like a simple hot potato style song. And I think it went something like, have you ever felt this way about someone that you love? Have you ever felt it important to let them know how you feel? I worship you, I love you, and so on and so forth. It was just like words. Yeah. I did that on purpose because I wanted to, you know, show people that hopefully I have less syllables per note now. You know, or however you want to look at it. Less syllables means writing progression.
Yeah.
There we go.
Do I have
heartbreak and brat stalls and purple attics? So, summing me up.
No, you've pretty much answered all my questions.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
I feel like I've really learnt a lot about myself.
That's good.
I feel like I'm going to look back on this and possibly ask it to be taken down. No, it's cool, man. I feel like it's a huge part of me to digress. So there we go. It's going to keep on happening. Just gotta learn to find the rainbow in yourself. You know?
Yeah.
Love the mind.
Have you got anything to plug?
To plug?
Any like events that are coming up?
Yes. So I'm doing something called Hear Her Sounds. You can go on my Instagram when I'll just confirm dates and stuff. But it's actually been set up in a really gorgeous little orange record shop in Hoxton. So that'll be this month. And then I'm also doing, I think, the next Poetical Words on the 26th. Yeah. So that'll be in Hounslow. Be so vibing.
Yeah,
I've got a gig on the 10th in Angel. So again, like, if you just check out my Instagram feed, I'll keep you updated. So that's Aya UK, which is EIA UK. My mind's a bit wavy. So follow my Instagram and there'll be some more specific times and dates. Yeah, Hear Her Sound should be awesome because it's celebrating women's writing. And the last gig that I did was raising awareness for Nordoff Robbins, which is a really cool music therapy charity.
Okay.
And I'm working with Q, the guy who runs Poetical Words, what a legend, to start setting up a soup kitchen in Hounslow, actually.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So we're doing some cool vibing stuff to raise awareness for music therapy, poetry therapy, and yeah, helping the homeless, which is really, really cool.
That is pretty cool.
So we'll see. We'll see if creativity can help the world, all the rainbows.
There'll be a profile of Aya on the website for you guys to check out with all her social links and other information. There'll even be a quote, and that'll be interesting to see, guys.
Did you say a quote?
Yeah,
what,
quote.
From this podcast?
From you.
Oh. I'm a rainbow. Check me out.
See? It's already spitballing ideas.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
I could end with a poem, bring the tone down ever so slightly.
National
but,
Poetry Day,
it's actually one that I wrote on a Thursday. So, okay. Thursday spiel, got that hurt day feel. Many faces of me, many faces you see. Thursday spiel, feel like life ain't real. So I stop, don't step up, drop, can't get enough sleep, because the sleep that I've been living leaves me wide awake. Dream, because these nightmares grab my only escape. Happy Poetry Day.
Ah, that was beautiful.
Thank you very much. You know, trying to show people I have a more serious side. there we go.
But yeah, thank you guys at home for listening. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. And if you haven't, we'll fooled you for us at home for an hour and 33 minutes. Not liking this episode. You're an idiot.
It's vibes upon vibes upon vibes. Rainbows for days. Diversity is real. It's happening.
No, I can imagine that. Oh, I hate this. I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna listen to it right to the end, and then I'm gonna make a comment about it.
Please do. I'll probably say something that's unrelated.
Yeah. Thank you.
Peace, guys. Goodbye. Bye.